Toronto-based blues roots and gospel singer Samantha Martin will be playing the Toronto Blues Society's 28th annual Women's Blues Review, taking place at Massey Hall in Toronto on Saturday, November the 22nd. She's currently applying the finishing touches to her as yet untitled new long player with her band Delta Sugar, a release that's expected early next year. Because of her strong stage presence and powerhouse vocals, Samantha Martin is very much a once-seen, never-forgotten live experience. That she writes strong songs and sings like she grew up along the Mississippi Delta just adds to the mystique. We caught up with her at the recent Folk Music Ontario conference for a feature-length conversation and impromptu session. But before we get there, this is the title track from her 2014 EP, Mississippi Sun. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
You didn't even say a proper goodbye. When I left that night, so I left lipstick kisses on your bathroom mirror for you to remember me by.
Great to have you join us today.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Jan.
We just listened to Mississippi Sun. That is the title track from your EP that I think was released in April of 2014.
That's correct. Yeah, April 2014.
I always like to start my interviews talking about why you decided you wanted to make music your career. And it's always a good start. Now, if I remember rightly, you grew up in Lionshead, which is just into the Bruce Peninsula, is that right?
Yes, it is. Yeah, I was born in Edmonton, and I grew up in Lionshead, Ontario. Little town, it's like a hamlet. I don't even know if you can call it a town. It's only 500 people. But yeah, I grew up there and went to school there. And
so what was it about growing up that made you realize that maybe music would be a good career path for you?
My dad plays guitar and he sings, and he never made a career out of it or anything like that, but he was always the life of the party, and he taught me how to play the guitar. And I think in about grade four, I was part of the Sound of Music musical at my school play or something like that when I was in grade four. And the teacher was auditioning the grade four students for somebody who was going to play, take the lead on a few of my favorite things. And I got up and I sang my heart out and I got the lead, and she was calling in teachers from all around the, all the neighboring classrooms, and like, you got to hear this girl sing. And I think that was the moment that I went, oh, this is fun. I'm getting attention, you know, like as a musician, you either love the attention or you don't love the attention. And I did. I liked it.
Certainly, having seen you in concert, I sense that you like to be up on stage. You like the opportunity to dialogue with the audience between the songs.
Yeah. I mean, I try, and I've definitely gotten better at my dialogue with the audience. Every musician grows. As the more you do it, the better you get at it. And I definitely like the connection that you can make with an audience. I like talking to people after my shows. You know, sometimes you go to these festivals and they ask you to sit at the autograph table, and you're always a little bit paranoid that you're going to just be sitting there with a Sharpie. But, you know, I've been very fortunate. A lot of people want to come up and tell me stories about how my songs connected to their life somehow, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I really do enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
So you had this awakening around the time of The Sound of Music that you realized that maybe there is a bit of a gift there. Did that change what you were doing? I'm always curious to know whether people actually went into a formal program that allowed them to develop their music.
No.
Or whether it was more just an organic process.
It was an organic process for sure. I mean, I would audition for, you know, the Christmas pageants and ask if I could do one of the Christmas songs at the Christmas pageant, or be the lead in some musical thing that was going on in the play. And sometimes I got it and sometimes I didn't. And then when I went to college, you know, you would think that I would have gone on to a music program of some sort, but I wanted to be a flight attendant. And then I was too...
Well, if you were on WestJet, you would get to sing.
Well, yeah. I mean, there is that. There is that. However, I think I was too short to reach the overhead bin, so I picked a degree in business instead. So because I didn't really know what I wanted to do, so I thought business is pretty applicable to a lot of things. So I went to school for business.
Well, actually, and that's probably not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Because an awful lot of independent musicians would really benefit from having a little bit of business training.
Absolutely. You know, like sometimes I get asked to do things with youth, and they ask me, you know, like these youth people are like, oh, well, you know, what program should I take at Humber? And all these sorts of questions, right? And I was like, you know what? Take a 2-year business course. Because, like, do whatever you want in music, go to Humber. I'm not saying don't go to Humber. But in addition to going to Humber, go and take a marketing course. Go and take a business course so that you can do your own books. So that you can, you know, market yourself, and you don't have to spend that money paying somebody else to do that for you. And, you know, some people appreciate that and some people don't. But, you know, it is a business. The music, they call it the music business for a reason. So, you know, I never had any formal training as far as vocals and guitar lessons and that sort of thing, it's all been very organic for me. And it wasn't until I got out of college, and I was about 23 or 24, that I started playing live music.
So where was that? Was that down in Toronto? Or?
No, actually, that was in Owen Sound, Ontario.
Oh, so you went from Lion's Head, you moved down to Owen Sound, and then...
Yeah, it's a little bit of a backstory. I went to school in Edmonton. I went to Grant McEwen. And so I lived in Edmonton for a period of time between the ages of 18 and 22. I moved back to Lion's Head for, I think, 3 months or 6 months to kind of figure out what I wanted to do next. And the closest major center, well, not major center, but even town with traffic lights in it was Owen Sound. And so I thought, well, Lion's Head's a little small for me in my, you know, early 20s. So I thought, I'm going to go to Owen Sound. And I met up with Trevor and Tara McKenzie, who have a band called the McKenzie Blues Band. And they got me going to open mics and open jams. And they recorded my first EP ever at their house. And if anybody who's listening has that, please don't share that with anybody. Not because they did anything wrong, but because it's like, it was some of the first songs I'd ever written, and I was so green and fresh, and you know, so it's a little bit, I listened to it when I was out visiting my mom recently, and oh man, it made me laugh. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I imagine your mom would play everything in your catalog, whatever you feel.
Oh yeah, she thinks it's great, right? And I listened to it. I listened to it with her, and I'm just like, oh my gosh! Thank goodness I've grown so much in the last, you know, 10 years. That it's it makes a big difference. The more you do it, the better you get at it. So yeah. Anyway.
So you moved now from Owen Sound to Toronto. That's where you're based now?
Yeah, I'm based in Toronto and have been since 2006. So I've been there. I've been here for quite some time now. Yeah.
So once you moved to Toronto, that was when you had your first band? Were you playing with anyone else before you actually decided that you wanted to have a band that was Samantha Martin?
Between 2006 and 2008, I did a lot of open mics and a lot of jams and stuff, just to meet people who are like-minded. And in the process, I met Derek Downham, who produced my first record and played a lot of the instruments on that record. And then after I released that record, which was called Back Home, I released it in 2008. And I got tired of teaching session musicians and like hired guns the songs every time I wanted to play a show, because shows, people would ask me, oh, do you want to play a show, you know, next week? And then I'd be, you know, cramming rehearsals and trying to get everybody up to speed to do these shows. Well, I had met Mikey McCallum, who's still my guitar player. And he was playing in a band called the Kensington Hillbillies. And the bass player, Greg Sweetland, and the drummer, Pete Lambert, they became the Haggard. So I basically went, they're a good band. Can I borrow them? And Steve Ketchin obliged and let me borrow them and we recorded a record in 2012, which was the self-titled Samantha Martin and the Haggard. And we toured that album pretty extensively, and one night at one of the conferences, Folk Music Ontario, Folk Alliance, I think it was Folk Alliance, in February 2012, we did this showcase, and we weren't allowed drums and not allowed to have bass unless it was an upright bass. And Greg was like, well, if there's no drums, I'm not going to learn upright bass just for, you know, a 40-minute set or whatever. So I was like, okay, fair enough. So I took the guitar player and the two backing vocalists off of the Samantha Martin and the Haggard record, which was Amoy and Cecile Levy. And we did the showcase, and I was like, okay, we're going to do all the bluesy gospel stuff. We're going to channel some staple singers, and we're going to do this showcase, and it's going to be great. and everybody obliged, and we did the showcase, and it was actually a huge hit. People are like, I've never heard anything like that. And I'm like, well, that's because I didn't even plan to do it that way. So we got a lot of work out of it, out of that one showcase that I did with just the four of us. So Delta Sugar was born at a conference, very much like the one we're at right now.
That is so cool because, you know, one of the neat things about coming to a conference like this is the fact that it is a great networking place. And I think it's because there are so many creative people coming together, and there is that thing where you may end up playing with people you hadn't played with before or hadn't intended to play with before. Yeah. Suddenly something amazing happens that can send you off on a different career path.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's Delta Sugar is actually sonically what I've been trying to achieve for some time. I didn't know what I wanted, and I didn't know how to, but, you know, conversations every time we recorded a record was, I want it to be, you know, lots of room and lots of space, and I want the emphasis on the vocals and the lyrics, and, you know, sometimes it's addition by subtraction in music. You know, I think a lot of musicians and a lot of recording artists have the tendency to go, oh, we're recording this really crazy record and we're going to get a horn section and we're going to get a keyboard player and we're going to have a drummer and a bass player and a, you know, a pedal steel player and a fiddle and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And what ends up happening is sonically you're taking up all the space and there's no room to just let the listener's mind kind of go, you know, on their own journey through the music and let them hear things. And you know, it's always been my philosophy that less is more sometimes, you know?
I would absolutely agree.
And I'm not saying that I don't love a horn section and that I don't love drums and bass because it's a whole different energy and it's a whole different process and vibe on stage and in the studio. And it does produce sonically very beautiful things. But for me, I thought Delta Sugar was something that wasn't being done on a regular basis and widely across Canada or the States. And you know, I thought, well, this is a niche for me that I just stumbled upon, and this is going to be good. So, and it has been.
Giving me goosebumps again.
Ah!
Seems to happen a lot on this show these days. You have a guitar with you.
I do.
We are at the Folk Music Ontario Conference.
Yes.
In our little mobile studio that a lot of people would say is just a hotel room, but we're having a lot of fun here today. You're working on a new album, and I think you're going to play a song from that.
Yeah, I'm going to play a song called When You Walk Away. And just imagine beautiful, soulful backing vocals all over this.
This is Jan Hall from Folk Roots Radio. My guest today, Samantha Martin, live at the Folk Music Ontario Conference.
All right.
Don't you lie to me. It's so, so plain to see that you think of her every day. It's gonna break my heart when you walk away. If you're leaving, just go. You don't even have to let me know. The mistake that you made when you broke my heart and walked away. Ooh, when you walked away. We fight so much, and you still
long for her touch. My time and our love just keeps slipping by. I don't know how you can watch me cry. If you're leaving, just go. You don't even have to let me know. The mistake that you made when you broke my heart and walked away, yeah, yeah. Ooh, when you walked away. Whoa, when you walked away. If you're leaving, just go. You don't even have to let me know. The mistake that you made when you broke my heart and walked away, yeah, yeah.
That was lovely. That was Samantha Martin live at the Folk Music Ontario Conference with a song from the new album.
Yeah.
Now, the new album doesn't have a title. Do we know when the album will be released?
The album will be released between January 15th and February 15th. We're still in the mixing process, so I want to see how long it takes to get copies of it, and then of course service radio and press and all that kind of stuff. So I'll have a date by December.
That's the business training coming in.
Yes.
We're doing this in a proper organized way.
Yes.
That's wonderful. All of the songs on the album, are they all your own, or will there be one or two covers in there?
There will not be any covers necessarily. There is one co-write with Susie Vinnick called Don't Shoot the Messenger. And then there is a song that I guess would be considered a cover, but it's my producer, he wrote the song, and it's called My Crown. And his name is Wrench. It was a bad Scrabble accident. It was it's a R-E-N-C-H. And he is a gentleman out of Brooklyn, New York, and he plays in a band called Gangstergrass, which is a blend of bluegrass and hip hop. And I met them at Folk Alliance in Kansas City earlier this year in February. And he was super excited about what we did. And he really, really wanted to produce this album. So, and he did a great job. And yeah, so we do have one cover of sorts, but it wouldn't be like a obvious cover, like a Staple Singers cover. Like,
it's yeah. Interesting you're doing that, because that to me makes a lot of sense with the stage you're at in your career to actually go down to the States for a producer. Because I imagine with the direction your career's going that I could see you eventually playing down south in the U.S. and maybe in, you know, somewhere like New Orleans or something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Markets like the United States are very big markets. And it's expensive for Canadian musicians because you have to get P2 visas to work. And even though the cities are really close by and it's a lot easier to tour versus Canada, because Canada is a very vast country and there's little dead spots where there's not much in between. Like, for example, Sudbury to Thunder Bay. That's a little harder to you know, you do a lot of driving to get from one city to the next, whereas it's a little easier in the States. But as a Canadian who's never played in the States, you don't really have a fan base, so you're really breaking into a new territory. So definitely working with another band and a producer who are based out of the United States is definitely an upper hand. But I would have worked with a Canadian producer just as quickly and just as easily, and would have probably got a very, like, an equally or possibly better product. I don't know. But, you know, you work with the people who show the most interest. It's a weird thing, because there's so many incredible Canadian producers. And I just didn't think that any of the people that I spoke to were super into it, you know? And you definitely go with your gut on those kind of things, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It seems to me it would be a very much a gut feel situation, because this is really a very creative process. I always remember a great interview with Neil Young talking about where his songs came from, and he really couldn't explain how the song got out of his head, you know, onto
paper.
He was creating this masterpiece of whatever it was, because he honestly couldn't explain it. It was just a gift.
Yeah.
And I see that in pretty much everybody that I interview. I mean, there aren't that many people that you can say, oh, yeah, this is, you know, making music by numbers. Those people exist and they can do really well.
And they live in Nashville and L.A.
Exactly. But most people are not those people. And they're basically working with their gift when they feel it come.
Yeah. You know, my songwriting process is very sporadic. Basically, a mood will strike me. I will sit down and from start to finish, there will be a song. And it will either be a good song or it will be a bad song. But and it's very sporadic. I went down to Nashville in January with the, you know, hope that I was going to write all these songs at the SoCan House down in Nashville. And I was going on a songwriting retreat. And I ended up just walking the streets of Nashville, you know, like that was. But I came home and I had little spurts of creativity. But I think sometimes my business degree gets in the way of my creativity because I keep thinking of all the business stuff that has to get done in order to, you know, put out a record. Oh, I need to get, you know, distribution, and I need a publicist, and I need to source out where I can get vinyl pressed. And so the business side of it takes over a lot of the time. So the creative part sometimes can take a back seat when you're really busy trying to release a record, for example. I tend to work very well under a deadline. I wrote 4 songs about a week before we went into the studio, and they made the cut. Some of them made the cut, some of them didn't. But, you know, and that's my process. I work very good under a deadline, and I can produce a lot of music. Some of them are good, some of them are bad. And at the end of the day, you know, it's the producer's job to pick which ones are good and which ones are bad. That's what I trust his judgment.
So what comes first when you're writing? Are you someone that works on the lyrics first, or do you tend to work on the melody, the music arrangement you're going to put to it?
I would say 90% of the time it's the melody and what I... Because guitar playing isn't... It's not that I'm a bad guitar player, but I'm not as proficient as some people on the guitar. So I think I start with my weakness. So I tend to start playing chords on the guitar and find something I like and then start humming the melody. And then, oh, okay, so I like that melody. Well, what bad thing happened to me today that I want to write about? And, or what movie did I watch sometimes? You know, like little things like that. Like a scene in a TV show will prompt some kind of song that I want to write. But definitely a lot of the songs that I write are autobiographical. And you know, they tend to be born out of situations that I've personally gone through. And this upcoming album is a very deeply personal record for me, for sure.
You mentioned that you have the guitar and the fact that you will write, you know, come up with a melody with a guitar and then write some lyrics. You have a guitar with you just now. Mm-hmm. Why not play another song from the new album? What would you like to play for us?
All right. Geez. What song do I want to play? Seeing as we're talking about that. I'm going to play you a deeply personal song. This is called Give Me Your Mercy. My mom was recently diagnosed with terminal cancer. And it's been a very hard year for me dealing with the inevitability of her passing. But this song is called Give Me Your Mercy because sometimes you feel like the cards are kind of stacked up against you and you feel like you can't catch a break. And I feel with my mom, sometimes life hasn't given her a lot of breaks. You know, she's 51 years old. She's a beautiful woman. And she just, you know, just haven't caught any breaks lately. So this song is called Give Me Your Mercy. Give me your mercy. Oh, tell me your plan. Oh, take me, for I
That was beautiful. I just want to say thank you for sharing such an incredibly personal story. Obviously, I'm deeply sorry to hear.
You know what?
Your family situation and
you know
wish
what?
You all the best.
I have a hard time. I sit on the fence about telling people about it because I know some artists. I've watched some artists tell a really deeply personal story but it comes off as really insincere. Or like they're looking for some kind of sympathy. I'm not looking for sympathy, or condolences or anything like that. What I'm looking to do by saying, oh, my mom's going through this thing, and this is how it's affecting me, because it is affecting me. And when things affect me, I write about them. And I know a lot of artists who are the same way and don't share where that song comes from. But I think it's important for me to share where that song and another song that I've written that will be on the album, it's important for me to let people know where that comes from, because I mean, cancer and all sorts of illnesses and diseases are rampant in our world right now. And everybody has a family member or somebody that's going through it. And I think showing them that there's a way to grieve in a way that's creative and allows you to say, here's this song and it might help you because it's helped me. And yeah, I really do struggle with telling people that kind of stuff. But, you know, this is the time to do it. Sometimes I get at a live show and everybody's having a good time. You don't want to bum them out. And I don't. But, you know, seeing as this is a radio show and you're asking me about where my songs are coming from, well, that's where that one did.
Well, you know, I think it's good. I mean, I want to steer the conversation into the live experience because having seen you perform live in a festival experience, one of the things that is really clear is not just that you love being up on stage and enjoying the relationship with the audience, but there is a tremendous connection between artist and audience when you play. That to me seems to be really important to you. Is that what you, part of what you hope you give people when they come to see you in concert?
Absolutely. I really try really hard to connect with my audience because it does mean a lot to me. And I think putting on a show and not just being, you know, selfish and what it brings to me is part of putting on a show. Like if you look back into the 60s and the 70s, when artists like Ike and Tina Turner went out on the road, it was a show. And I'm not saying that we quite take it to that level, but, you know, getting up on the bass bins and getting excited about it and singing to audience members and all that kind of stuff. It can be kitschy or it can be like your little, oh, that's my shtick. But I think it does, the audience appreciates it because you're not just standing there with a guitar stationary. And I think if you move, the audience moves. And my dad always said to me, you've got two options, Sam. You can make them cry or you can make them dance. You can't go in between those two. So he goes, if you're going to play a sad song, make sure it's real sad. And if you're going to play a fast, upbeat dance song, make sure people can dance to it or clap along or stomp their feet or sing like a call and answer kind of thing. He's, you know, like, and I really did take that to heart. Make them cry or make them dance. So,
you know, I think it's great that you think that because that's exactly what I think. I mean, as someone who loves going to shows, I want to feel that I went to a show, that I don't want to feel that the performer is there and the music may be great and their songs may be beautiful. But I kind of want to feel that they're putting it out there. You know, I know that you can't do that night after night, but you want to have that feeling that they're putting it out there. And I think that that separates the great performers from performers that are really good, but haven't reached that level of greatness.
I think that too much emphasis is put on being note perfect. And as soon as you start being very technical in a creative process, you lose that feeling and that vibe that people in an audience respond to. You can be note perfect. Some of the best, like the best show I've ever seen was Lucinda Williams at Massey Hall.
I think I might have been at that show.
And it was, she had a binder on stage that was like 3 inches thick and she's flipping through the book on stage. I'm like, somebody get this woman a teleprompter, right? And then she stopped and started a song like 3 times or something. And I'm like, you're at Massey Hall. So many musicians would just die to be on that stage. And you're just up there with a book 3 inches thick, flipping through pages and stopping and starting songs. But when she got it, it gives you goosebumps. The way she performs and her voice and the intimate way she delivers songs, you know, and it she writes from a very personal space as well and you know, writes about her life and her experiences in a lot of circumstances, and she's not note perfect, Her band might be, but she's not. Definitely not. But you know what? That's the beauty of it. Because good, bad, or ugly, she feels every word that comes out of her mouth. And I think that's an important thing. And that's what's lacking in today's big hits. Is that it's a very mathematical way of arriving at a song. And it's given to, you know, like this little teeny bopper girl or teeny bopper boy. And it's about love that they've never have experienced. They haven't even have come even close to that kind of love or that kind of heartache or, you know, that relationship, you know, and they sing it. And yes, it's note perfect. But it lacks any feeling at all. And I think that's the problem with commercial music these days, is that you go into a studio and the guy's got, the producer is asking you to sing one word at a time, you know, like, that was a good line, but let's go back and sing that word differently, because I want you to put a little less emphasis on the and a little more right, like that kind of stuff. And it's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous, because then you go to the show, to the live performance, and they can't do it. They can't do it, and they put their backing tracks on, and they put their, where they're not even singing, they're lip syncing half of the tune, and that's what's killing live music.
You put it very well. It's a lot of the reason why I like to do what I do.
Yeah.
And get out there and record interviews with independent musicians who are really trying to bring their wonderful, creative, artistic expression to the people. Because it bothers me as a radio broadcaster that so many people seem to be focused on this music they get fed, when there is this wealth of talent producing absolutely fabulous, fabulous music that don't get the opportunity to share the music with them.
Well, and I'm going to put this out there. In no way, shape, or form am I saying I don't want to be on commercial radio, because of course you do. You know, like that's a big milestone for any artist, is to get their song played on commercial radio, and the royalties are insane and it's great. But you know what? My dad asked me about 2 years ago and said, if this is as big as you ever make it, will you be happy? And I said, yes. And he goes, good. And that was the whole conversation. And you know, it's, people ask me all the time, well, if you weren't a musician, what else would you do? And it's like, well, I could do a lot of things, but why would I want to do anything else but be a musician? And Richard Flohill has a great quote. Well, it's not Richard. Richard Flohill says it a lot. And it's John Lee Hooker saying, it's too late to quit now. And that's kind of how I feel. There's no such thing as an overnight success. It's 10 years in the making, you know, and that's me.
That's a wonderful way to put it. We're going to take a break for another song. You have a guitar, so I'm going to force you to play one more during today's interview. This is Folk Roots Radio. We're live from the Folk Music Ontario Conference. My guest today is Samantha Martin. She is preparing to release her as yet untitled new album. We'll be expecting it, as she said, between the 15th of January and the 15th of February, which means I think we might need to hold it to that. What are you going to play for us this time?
Okay. Now, usually I have these two wonderful backing vocalists, and they do these little call and answer sort of things. I've never tried to play this one all by my lonesome before, but let's see how it goes. It's called Addicted.
I must have been a fool to think that I could change
got me spinning, and I'm addicted, addicted to your love. I see you there, I see you there with her. You're trying to make me, my mind. And at the end of the night, you got me spinning, and I'm addicted, addicted to your love. Tell me why I always. Tell me why I'm always missing your good loving in the middle of the day. You got me thinking that I'm addicted, addicted to your so much.
That was absolutely fabulous. Wow. Thank you. Enjoy singing in that song?
I do. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. And with the girls, it's so great. I love it.
So let's talk briefly about the live experience. If people come to a show by Samantha Martin and Delta Sugar, what can people expect?
A lot of stomping and clapping and easily singable songs. Yeah. I don't know how to answer that really. It's like, it's, you can expect to have a good time. and it's definitely about the vocals, and it's a lot of very powerful vocals. And the girls that I sing with, Cherie Marshall and Stacey Tabb, they're incredible, and it's just a good energy. I really do love singing with this band, and Mikey on guitar, you know, like, he's so tasteful, you know. It's not super busy guitar because I don't pay him by the note. And, you know, he just holds it down. It's great.
If people want to learn more about your music, how can they do that?
We have a website, SamanthaMartin.ca. We're on Twitter, and it's Roots and Roll. ROOTSNROLL. We're on Facebook. We have a page called Samantha Martin Music. And we have Instagram and all sorts of stuff. But definitely the website, SamanthaMartin.ca, will take you to all of those things.
It's been a great pleasure having you join us on Folk Roots Radio today. Remember, our guest has been Samantha Martin. You can find her online at SamanthaMartin.ca.
And thank you so much, Jan, for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
What I would like you to do is introduce the last song, which is going to be from the EP that came out earlier this year.
Okay.
What are we going to play?
I think we're going to play a song called One More Day. And One More Day was originally written as a very slow country ballad. And it is now a gospel stomper, and I really do enjoy that song, and Yeah, beautiful song. One More Day.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Samantha Martin, I look forward to seeing where your career goes next.
Oh, it's going places. You watch.
You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall. This is Samantha Martin and Delta Sugar on One More Day. We'll see you next time. Whoa, 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 whoa.
Tell my mama not to cry. Tell her baby's doing just fine. Though the road is full of sorrow, there's not much I can't beg, steal, or borrow. One more day to love.